Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda, and In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood, Bells and Whistles.
Okay, so here on In the Booth, Randeep, we take you behind the scenes, we give you a perspective that not everyone has. And here's the unique perspective we're going to give you tonight. We were 2 minutes away from being done recording this episode. We talked at length about the JT Miller trade. We talked at length about the return, about Miller's legacy as a Canuck. And we'll probably still get into some of that stuff later on in the show. And just as we were about to wrap up, Elliot Friedman ruined our night because he sent out a tweet saying the Canucks had made yet another trade, and subsequently the Canucks announced that trade. So, if you're catching up, the Vancouver Canucks made two big deals on Friday, and we are recording this now at about 9 p.m. Pacific time on Friday night. The first deal, they sent JT Miller along with Eric Brandstrom and prospect Jackson Dorrington to the New York Rangers. In return in that trade, they got Philip Hedel, they got prospect defenseman Victor Mancini, and they got the Rangers' first-round pick, top 13 protected for this year, that would have become an unprotected first-round pick in 2026 if the Rangers ended up in the lottery. So we spent a whole episode talking about that trade and its implications and moving forward for the Vancouver Canucks. And then they announced another trade. And that trade is a deal made with the Pittsburgh Penguins, where the Canucks are sending the first-round pick that they just acquired from the Rangers mere hours ago in the JT Miller trade, along with Danton Heinen, Vincent Desharnais, and prospect Melvin Fernstrom to the Penguins in exchange for defenseman Marcus Pedersen and winger Drew O'Connor. So our night has not gone the way we thought it was going to, not the way we wanted it to, for two reasons. One, the Canucks made another trade. We're having to re-record the whole episode. The episode we recorded already has been thrown in the trash bin. Secondly, there are now three Pedersens on the Vancouver Canucks roster. And if I had any hair on the top of my head, I'd be pulling it out right now.
You should have seen Batch roll his eyes as I was going on a soliloquy and this trade went down. He had a look of disgust on his face that we had to re-record this. But yes, and I am that much further away from my dinner for the evening, so it sucks all around. But let's break down this trade and these trades. And it's been an eventful night. Remember, there was a game that was played on Friday night as well. The Vancouver Canucks lost that game to the Dallas Stars. But I think it has to start with the JT Miller deal, Batch. This is the player that has put up 100 points for the Canucks. This is a guy that is 11th all-time in scoring with the Vancouver Canucks, is the second highest points per game, only behind Pavel Bure as a Vancouver Canuck. And any time you trade a player of that sort of impact, even though we know the last couple of months were not good vibes around the team, you and I are in that locker room, we could sense it going months back, but it is still a huge moment in the foreseeable future for this franchise and the path that they have now set. When the JT Miller deal went down, it felt like, okay, you know, what's this next move going to be? I didn't think it was going to be a mere hour or two later, but here we are, and you outlined it perfectly. A number of players going out of the organization and also four coming in.
So there's a couple of ways we can look at this, and I think it's instructive to look at this almost as one big trade. And I know people will be frustrated by that because the initial reaction we're seeing online, and to be honest, my initial reaction is I don't like this deal they made with the Penguins.
Yep.
Because of the value of that first round pick, we just spent the better part of 15 or 20 minutes of the episode that we recorded that will never go to air talking about how that pick was arguably the most valuable piece in that trade, about how they might be able to weaponize that to go and get another Philip Hronek. I don't know if Marcus Pedersen is that next Philip Hronek. So overall, if we take out the assets that came in and went out, this is one big trade that is essentially JT Miller, Danton Heinen, Vincent Desharnais, Eric Brandstrom, prospects Melvin Fernstrom and Jackson Dorrington going out, and Philip Hedel, Victor Mancini, Marcus Pedersen, and Drew O'Connor coming in. So in terms of the immediate roster implications for the Canucks, they don't have as much depth down the middle. They're looking now at four centermen that are likely to be Elias Pettersson, which we have to get used to saying because now we have to clarify. Elias Pettersson, Filip Hedl, Pew Suter, and Teddy Bluger. Those are the four centermen for the Vancouver Canucks, and you can argue what order they're going to be deployed in. Vancouver's defensive depth, though, is improved. Their defensive pairings could possibly be Hughes and Myers, Marcus Pettersson and Filip Hronek, and then a third pairing of Derek Forbert and likely Carson Soucy, with Soucy moving to the right side and Noah Juulsen being bumped out of the lineup into a seventh defenseman role, at least for the moment. So, when looking at their current roster, not as good down the middle. Better on defense. We can't argue that in the short term. And I think a small upgrade on the wing, too. I like Drew O'Connor. He's a fast, forechecking kind of forward. Doesn't have a lot of offense or finish to his game. Isn't going to score a lot of goals. But I think he's a better fit for the style that this team wants to play in the bottom six for Rick Tocchet than Danton Heinen was. But all of this said, I still think that fans are rightly going to be frustrated with the return in the Pittsburgh trade and shipping this first-round pick out again mere hours after acquiring it. Now, we know that part of that is that they move off the Desharnais contract and the Heinen contract, and those are contracts that they've been eager to move off of for a while. And so because of that part of this, the one thing I will say in defense of this trade, and for the most part, I do not like this deal with the Penguins for a couple of reasons. One, Marcus Pettersson, pending UFA. Drew Connor, pending UFA. So, you know, maybe they've been able to have contract discussions with their camps. Maybe we'll see deals for these guys drop. Hopefully not before we're done recording this episode, because then we'll have to throw this one out the window.
I'm not
as
re-recording
well.
This, Ben.
No, this is the final one. We're not doing it again. But it gives them added flexibility by moving the Desharnais contract out, by moving the Heinen contract out. And one thing that we did talk about quite a lot in the episode that will never see the light of day, the one we recorded that we will not be releasing, is how the initial Miller trade gave this team more flexibility with the cap, and how in the modern NHL, flexibility and cap space and assets are valuable tools to have in your arsenal. So my only thought about this Pittsburgh trade is, as much as it doesn't look great on the face of it, on paper, especially if they can't re-sign Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor, it feels like it's setting up for another big shoe to drop for this organization. And whether that's something they already have lined up or whether it's something they're going to work towards, heck, Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser could still be traded away. So everything is on the table now. You know, anything is possible. We'll see what happens. But that's what I'll say in defense of this trade with the Penguins is the story isn't finished yet. The trade deadline hasn't passed. We don't know what else they have up their sleeves, and there could be more coming.
Yeah, when I look at the series of trades here, because I think it's, yes, it's all one big trade if you think about it, because there's one move to set up another. The first half of it, I'll be honest with you, the JT Miller one, I know there was a lot of people saying they didn't get enough. When a player holds a no-movement clause, there's only so much you can do. There's only so many parties you can negotiate with. And if a player has a certain destination set in stone, whether, you know, they had a couple more options or not, or this was the best deal, you know, it really comes down to the player and where they want to go. I didn't mind that deal. To me, it was, hey, Filip Hedl, you've got an option at 2C. And at some point, you want to upgrade that position and you want to maybe bump him down to 3C with Mancini as well. You get somebody, a big body defenseman on the right-hand side. The second part of this deal, I'm not a fan of. And the reason I'll say that, I think you communicated it well, but anytime you're attaching potentially the knockout blow, the one piece that you can really make an impact with, which is that first-round pick, and you're adding it as, in a way, as a sweetener in this deal to take on the contracts for Vincent Desharnais and Danton Heinen. And I understand Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor are part of this as well, but I don't like that where you're essentially attaching it to Desharnais and Heinen and say, hey, take this off of us. Because those are also deals that this regime made themselves. Vincent Desharnais was a bet that they made, and they bet on coaching, and that one is a failure, right? With Danton Heinen, and listen, I thought Danton Heinen signing for that amount of money, it was a discount based on market value, But that one went wrong as well. He wasn't a fit in Vancouver. We saw it pretty early on where he didn't have that burst. He had a couple of moments, but overall, I'm just never a fan of attaching a first-round pick in this way to pick up two players that are going to be UFAs. And I think this first-round pick could have been used as more of a knockout blow. You could have played the patient game a little bit more, Batch. Maybe in the offseason, you make a move in the lead-up to the draft where you're dangling that in front of somebody, whether the Rangers use that pick this year or not. So I think when you look at these series of trades, at the two trades, the first one to me was, I was okay with that one. I thought that was a pass. I thought that was a potential win. The second one confuses me. And Marcus Pettersson will improve the back end here. But is there enough, in the short term, is there enough scoring on this lineup? And how do you address the center position moving forward? I thought the first round pick would be used to maybe get a 20-something center. Now you're going to have to look towards free agency. And I hate to say it, the free agency class does not look great this year at the center position. Yanni Gourde is probably one of your top picks. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Or a player of that kind of standing. So we'll see what happens. Maybe they have other deals lined up, as you mentioned. But flexibility is important, but so are first-round picks. If you have them, if you have extra ones, I think you got to use them wisely.
Well, and again, what the Canucks do from here is going to inform our ultimate opinion of the two moves that they made on Friday. You know, because Pettersson and O'Connor aren't signed, it doesn't look like a good deal now. But you extend, certainly Pettersson, I think he's the key piece of this deal.
Sure.
Marcus Pettersson, I should say. Again, we have to clarify from now on. We almost have to have like a fine jar for every time you just say Pettersson without a first name before it. But you would imagine making this kind of deal, either they're very confident they will be able to sign Marcus Pettersson to a long-term extension. They might have even been allowed by the Penguins to have some preliminary conversations around that with his representatives. Drew O'Connor, I guess there's an opportunity to see if he's going to be a fit in the bottom six. I think the flexibility that it gives them going into next season, moving off of Heinen and Desharnais, who still had term, is an added benefit. But again, you're right. You move out a key piece, and right now you don't have a quote-unquote second-line center as you would expect that to be deployed. But there is time. It doesn't have to just be in free agency, although it could be. You're right, the free agent class doesn't look great, but we still don't know if they're going to trade Elias Pettersson. We still don't know if they're going to trade Brock Besser. We still don't know if they're going to make another trade in 10 minutes and force us to start recording this again, all jokes aside, because you know we want to go home at some point here. But that's the thing I will say in defense of this is it doesn't feel like the last move. It feels like the next move. And that to me means that I as much as if this is the last move, then I think we can sit here and say this was not handled correctly.
Yeah.
They didn't mine the top value for either asset because ultimately the return you get for that first round pick is a reflection of the return you got for JT Miller. And going back to it again, in the podcast that we recorded that we'll never see the light of day, we talked a lot about the Miller return will look better in the future if they turn that first round pick into something. Just like the Horvat return looks better in hindsight because they turned that first round pick into Hronek. If this is the end of the line for these deals, if this is what this group looks like, if this is how they want to move forward, I think fans will be rightly disappointed with the return, and I think it'll be a missed opportunity with the value that that first round pick could have had, especially because it would have become an unprotected pick in 2026 if the Rangers miss the playoffs this year and end up in the lottery. And if that happens, you're talking about a potential premium asset, top pick that they've now moved on in this trade with Pittsburgh. And again, we'll wait and see what else they do. There could be more dominoes to fall, but as we sit in this moment trying to analyze it, it feels like an overpayment to move off a couple of contracts that they signed themselves.
Yeah, and on the second deal, Marcus Pettersson is a player that Jim Rutherford traded for. He actually traded Daniel Sprong from Pittsburgh to Anaheim for Marcus Pettersson in a deal way back when. I believe it was 2018, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, this is a player that he knows very well. Patrick Alvin was a part of the organization as well. So, you know, there is a belief that he is going to be able to solidify that left-hand side. So as a player, I think Marcus Pettersson on that second pair makes a lot of sense. You could see him and Tyler Myers potentially being a very strong second pair if they they bring back Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek and have that super pairing.
Either that or it's Pettersson and Hronek and Hughes and Myers, and suddenly, for the first time in a while, you look at the Canucks' top four and you say, okay, that's a legit top four. Like, Myers properly cast as the fourth defenseman if they deploy it that way. Yep. Pettersson makes sense as a three. Hronek makes sense as a two. Hughes is obviously a one. So
strong defensively, good puck mover. Like, Pettersson's a good player. Now, the question is, A, did they pay too much? And B, will they be paying too much on an extension as well? Like, that's a big part of that, if that's a part of the equation. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. The other thing is, the way that this team is looking right now, and you mentioned it, hey, the back end looks good.
I really like how the back end looks now, but in the short term.
But on the top end of this lineup, where are the goals going to come from? And there's more pressure on Elias Pettersson, and I would say there's probably more pressure on Filip Hedl and Pew Suter now as well. The third line might actually be the second line the way it's deployed in the next little bit here, where Garland and Joshua are playing together again. Pew Suter's in the middle of that. Is that going to be a line that's relied on for more offense? And I predict it'll be more low event hockey just based at this, looking at this lineup, but you're going to need some players to chip in there and, you know, and that's going to be a challenge. So more pressure on Pettersson, Besser, and DeBrusque, but I would also argue, welcome back to the lineup, Dakota Joshua. They're going to need some goals from you pretty quick.
Yeah, and so I went through this exercise before we started recording this, tried to draw what the lines could look like with all these trades made. So we'd already talked about the defensive pairings.
Sure.
Forbert, Soucy likely become the third pair. Juulsen likely comes out of the lineup. The forward lines, if we base them partially off the way Rick Tocchet deployed his group in Dallas. So let's go DeBrusque, Pettersson, Besser as the top line. And as you said, let's go Joshua, Suter, Garland as the second line for now. I think as much as you lose that scoring punch up the lineup with Miller, your bottom six is improved, right? Let's say it's a third line of O'Connor, who again, speedy winger, brings more pace in the bottom six. Probably about as capable of scoring as Danton Heinen was. Maybe not quite, but his style fits more of the mold of the way Rick Tocchet wants to play.
Career high is 16 goals. Danton Heinen was, I believe, 17. So around the same range.
Similar type of player. But more stylistic of a fit to a Rick Tocchet.
Straight line burner. Yep.
Filip Hedl in the middle. Kiefer Sherwood on the right side when he's healthy. We're assuming full health in this. And then a fourth line of Hoglander, Bluger, and whether you want to put Carlson in there, DiGiuseppe, anyone else that could be called up from Abbotsford. I wonder if Jonathan Lekkermäki gets a chance to come up and play in the NHL when he recovers from the injury he's dealing with right now to give them some of that scoring punch you're alluding to. So, again, we're trying to look at this in a balanced and unbiased way. So, areas this team is better, bottom six. Defense, particularly the top four. Areas this team is worse, down the middle, particularly up the lineup. Now, whether this is the end of the line for the moves at the moment, and this management group wants to watch this team come together, see if Pettersson can truly elevate into a number one center, see if either Hedl or Suter can prove to be serviceable in a second line role, or maybe more, we should think about that as a shutdown role, where Joshua Suter Garland could get matchup minutes. Then whatever center is not on that line, can you be like a third line that gets mismatches and you can generate offense down the lineup by playing against weaker competition from other teams? And then ultimately, does the added depth you get down the lineup on the third and fourth lines compensate for the lack of elite talent that you miss without JT Miller? These are the questions. My opinion is that they are better defensively, but worse off offensively, which is unlikely to lead to a more entertaining product. There's a chance it leads to a more successful product, because what are the things we hear from fans all the time about Rick Tocchet and about the way this team plays? You know, they think it's too defensive. They think it's too conservative. So if this is a head coach that wants to play conservatively, these moves tie into that style of play, because you could say, okay, our blue line's better. We can hopefully move the puck up the ice better because Pettersson can make a good first pass. So we spend less time in our own zone. We've got a better top four. And as a result, we can try and overcome that lack of offense by being an elite defensive team, which to a certain extent is how the Canucks had success last year, although they had more scoring punch with Miller as a 100-point guy in their lineup. And they obviously don't have that right now. So you know, it might signal a philosophical shift towards the way the coach wants to play, but I don't know if that means entertainment value or high scoring games or a lot of margin for error for this team in the way that they play.
Yeah, I'm more of a just win, you know, kind of approach. And I think with Marcus Pettersson, a couple of things. You mentioned the first pass. He's actually very, very good at zone exits as well. He's a player that has controlled exits, and that's exactly what this team needs. If you know, in the conversation with you for behind the bench prior to the Dallas game, there was a comment that Rick Tocchet made about also, you know, attacking that space and controlled puck zone exits, which is something. I forget whether it was the Dallas game or one of the previous ones, but
it might have been the interview that never went to air because they made the Miller trade.
Yeah, it might have been, right? So this is one of those situations where he's going to help with that. And I go back to, there's been a lot of talk about Nikita Zadorov and why he's missed in Vancouver. And it's not about physicality for me. That certainly helped. Don't get me wrong. But Batch, there are so many times in the playoffs especially where Zadorov was able to attack the middle of the ice and skate the puck out of trouble himself. He was able to hit the neutral zone with a controlled zone exit and sometimes with an entry. And I think Pettersson's going to help with that. He's going to be in a situation where he doesn't have to look for others. If he sees an opening, he's happy to skate, you know, out of trouble or into the neutral zone himself. That's going to be changing the way this team plays in the second and third pair of defense. So
yeah,
it is going to change the way we play. I think we're probably, you know, the fan base, a lot of media is probably underselling the impact he could have. I think a lot of that energy is coming from the first round pick that was dealt. And that's where, you know, there's some emotion there. And I, as I said, I'm not a huge fan of this deal because you had to attach that first rounder. But as a player, Marcus Pettersson is a significant upgrade on the back end. And especially in the situation and in the perspective that I mentioned there of relieving pressure and not just flipping it out. You're attacking the neutral zone with a controlled exit. That's going to be important for this team. So, yes, it might be more low event hockey, but you're maybe not making those mistakes, compounding those mistakes in your own zone that are costing this team right now, where it's a low-scoring game. You might lose the game 2-1 or 3-1, but it's one empty net goal at the end of it, and it's really a one-goal game that you end up losing. In this situation, I think Pettersson helps you relieve some of that pressure.
Yeah, and another thing I think we need to remember, as history repeats itself to a certain extent, because after the Horvat trade, there were a lot of people in the fan base that were excited that, okay, you know, this management group is doing what the previous one didn't. They're accruing picks. They're going to, you know, rebuild or retool the proper way, and they got a first-round pick, and they're going to be able to draft a good player. And not quite as quickly as this, on the same night, the organization turned around and traded that pick for Filip Hronek. And at the time, there was a lot of criticism of that decision and a lot of disappointment in the fan base because many people wanted them to keep that pick and use it. Ultimately, they didn't do that. Ultimately, it worked out. Filip Hronek has been a key core piece for this team. He's vastly improved the top end of their blue line. So there is a world in which Marcus Pettersson improves their defensive side of the puck to such a great degree that this trade looks good. I think the other thing we have to talk about, and again, we don't know how they're going to use this, but they did move off the Desharnais and Heinen contracts. They paid a pretty penny to do it, right? They gave up this first round pick in this deal. But that to me says we're gearing up for something else. We're not done yet. We're moving off of bad money so that we have more room to bring in contracts that we like and players that can help us. So, again, I've said it a couple times, but I'll come back to it again. This is not the finished product. I do not believe this is the roster that this management group will look to go through the long-term future with. They may not even look to go through the short-term future with. We could see moves before the deadline. Again, I expect Besser to get moved. I think there's still a chance Elias Pettersson is in play, which could, you know, be another sort of earth-shattering move that shakes the entire basis of what this franchise is and where things go from here. So with all of those caveats provided, this is still a team that will need to improve quite a bit to get to the level that they want to. And also, I think we have to juxtapose this to what the Calgary Flames did this week. The aggressive move they made with the Flyers, the pieces they brought in Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost. And I think there is at least a school of thought out there that says, hey, this week the Flames got better and the Canucks got worse.
For sure, right? Like, this is, you know, one of the issues with Calgary was that they were having a very difficult time scoring this year. And if you start looking at their top three scorers of Jonathan Huberdeau, Nazem Kadri, and Matt Coronado, the moves that Farabee and Morgan Frost are brought into Calgary is going to, at the very least, solidify their third line. Gives them a little bit more oomph. It gives them a little bit more depth. And this is a team that works very hard already. Now, from Vancouver's perspective, you lose on high-end talent. You're losing a player that is a game-breaker for you. You've made that deal. You're picking up Philip Hedl, who's a second-line center right now, but he's probably more of a middle-six guy. Now, you still have more game-breakers on your roster than the Calgary, though. You have Quinn Hughes, who is the best defenseman in the NHL, going back to last year. And sure, Cale Makar fans will say, hey, hold on a second, but we see what we see, and I'm saying Quinn Hughes is the best defenseman in the league. You also have Elias Pettersson. And I know he hasn't been that player in the last year, but he is paid like a high-impact player, like a superstar in this league, and there is an expectation with these deals, Batch, you have to see what Elias Pettersson can do now. You have to, of course, there's going to be pressure on Elias Pettersson, and there should be. You're making that much money. You are now the franchise center on this team. So even though Calgary has moved up maybe in terms of depth, when I look at game breakers to game breakers, when I look at Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, if Thatcher Demko's on his game, he's in that conversation as well of being amongst the best in the league. I still like Vancouver's mix better, but you need your game breaker in Elias Pettersson to drive offense. You need him to be assertive. You need him to take shots. You need him to win his matchups. So I think that's where this conversation is going to go now. You mentioned, yeah, there's a world that maybe he still gets traded as well, but now the runway is in front of Elias Pettersson. If you want to succeed in Vancouver, if you want to stay on the Vancouver Canucks, it's your team from a forward group perspective. And after this most latest deal where they trade for Marcus Pettersson, it's especially important because that first-round pick has moved on now. And if there was thought that that was going to be used to bring in a second-line center to help you out, no, that's been used to help out the left side of D. So now it's going to be, you got to produce. This is go time for Elias Pettersson, Batch. So I look at this and say, if the microscope was out before the second deal, it's definitely out now to say, I don't think there's any help coming on in the top six any other than Philip Hedl. So you got to start bringing the production if you're Elias Pettersson.
And the reason I bring up the Flames is because of the playoff picture right now. So as we record this on Friday night, the Canucks are 1 point behind the Flames for the last wild card spot in the Western Conference. The Flames have a game in hand on the Canucks. They will make up that game in hand on Saturday night when they host the Detroit Red Wings on Hockey Night in Canada. So, you know, by the time the Canucks get set to face those same Red Wings on Sunday back home at Rogers Arena, they could be 3 points behind the Calgary Flames for that last playoff spot. And, you know, I'll be interested. I'm going to be really interested to see if we assume that no more moves happen between now and Sunday. What is the vibe in that building going to be? What is the tone going to be like at Rogers Arena after these trades? Because we're seeing on social media and we're getting texts from buddies and people we know going, what are they thinking? What happened here? What was this decision-making process like? What are they doing? And again, there's still a chance for them to be vindicated if there's some master plan and subsequent deals coming that we aren't privy to. Like, as Jim Benning famously said,
we don't have the information.
We don't have the information, right? So this may not be the finished product. But let's just assume that they don't make a trade in 10 minutes and force us to re-record. And this roster, as we've just talked about it being currently constructed, is the roster that takes to the ice on Sunday against the Red Wings. The vibe in the building could be interesting, and I'll be fascinated to see how the fan base reacts to a very different looking team than the one that took to the ice the last time they were at Rogers Arena.
Batch, the only thing I can basically use it is my years of experience of living in the city and being a Vancouverite like you. I don't know if there's going to be much patience. I'll be honest with you. I think the Canucks have to bring effort in this next game because the patience is going to wear thin. Trade away one of your best players, which is understood why you do that because the vibes are off. But if you're a fan, that's not the fans' fault. The fans are expecting a good team. you had some good players. You had, you know, three or four players in the core that you're really proud of a year ago, and now all of a sudden you're questioning everything. So from a fan's perspective, I can understand if there's a lack of patience. I can understand if it's a bit uneasy and a little testy. But beyond that, to follow up your point on the Calgary Flames, they're 1 point behind the Flames. They're 2 points behind the LA Kings for the third spot in the Pacific. The Kings have a couple of games in hand.
Yeah.
And then on top of all of that, Colorado's not that far away either. It's about a 6 point gap right now with Colorado, and Colorado's got two games in hand. So there's a real, you know, opportunity for Vancouver still, despite everything going wrong in the last little bit, where you still have an opportunity to say, hey, is this a spot that you can still take advantage of if you get the fit with these new players right? And if it's a super conservative defensive system and you're scoring goals but you're grinding out victories, there's a way, Batch, for them to still strike when it comes to the playoffs, but the margin for error is going to be very, very slim.
It certainly is. Okay, we have made it most of the way through our second episode of the night here on In the Booth, the only one that's going to see the light of day, though. So we're going to take a break. On the other side, we're going to get to your questions because there are plenty of them that we need to discuss right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor. Alongside me, Randeep Janda, as always. And In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75 at 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood, Bells and Whistles. I'm not going to lie, I was there this week watching some Champions League as Arsenal progressed to the next round.
Yes, we had a question in from a listener asking for Arsenal and Man United updates. So Man United progressed to the next round of the Europa League as well. So
beat mighty Steaua Bucharest.
Yes, exactly. So we're not quite in the same conversation as you guys at Arsenal, but things are trending in the right direction.
Win's a win, my friend. Win's a win.
I hope for Man United. Anyway, we're wasting valuable time because the Canucks are making trades, and we got to finish this podcast before they make another one. Chance to remind you, though, that this podcast, as well as many others, live on the Canucks Central podcast feed. So if you've missed any part of the show, you want to get all the coverage around all the trades that the Canucks are making or will make or set to make or whatever's going to happen in the future, subscribe to the Canucks Central podcast feed. You get the daily show with Sat and Reach. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick. And you also get In the Booth every week with myself and Randeep. And we said we're not recording another episode, but there was some news that broke as we record this on Friday night. Jim Rutherford has spoken to Josh Yohe of The Athletic in the wake of the Marcus Pettersson trade. So I'm going to read some of these quotes, and this is the first time we're seeing these, Randeep, so we're going to react to them in real time. Josh asked Jim Rutherford, and again, these are quotes from The Athletic, are the Canucks, who were a spectacular story last season by pushing the Oilers to the brink, a team with Stanley Cup aspirations? That's a good question, Rutherford said at about midnight Eastern time. It's been a trying season, to say the least. To be honest, we're in a fight just to make the playoffs right now. But we are building for the stretch run. And the thing is, we're also building for the future as well. We're building, moving forward. We had to give up something to get Pettersson, but Marcus is one heck of a defenseman. I traded for him when I was in Pittsburgh, and I'm very happy with how that one turned out. I traded Daniel Sprong for him, and I could still remember people saying, how on earth can you trade Daniel Sprong for this guy? Well, I'm pretty darn happy with how that worked out. How good did that trade work out? And here we are again. We need an upgrade, and he's going to give us that. I know that he will. Look for Pettersson to be immediately inserted into the top four in Vancouver, says Yohe, and Rutherford follows up, quote, he's just what we need, in my opinion. You know what he is? He's just a very, very steady defensively defenseman. You need to have guys like that if you want to win in this league, and he's one of the really good ones. Rutherford also on Pettersson says, talk about a character guy, one of my favorites. We know that we're getting one heck of a good guy to go along with the fact that he's one heck of a good hockey player, end quote. And I think that last quote is maybe the most telling because of some of the reports of the discord in the dressing room and the feuding and, you know, speculation about lack of leadership in the wake of the JT Miller trade. They want quality people as well as quality players. Marcus Pettersson is a guy they know. It's clearly a guy that Jim Rutherford absolutely loves. And that gives you a window into why they were willing to give up the first round pick in this trade.
And that's the key, right? You have a player that, A, is going to solidify the back end. We talked about in the first segment, he's an individual that can skate out of trouble. He doesn't flip pucks out. He, you know, can obviously, but there's an area that he can tack the middle of the ice. And also, he's about, you know, league average when it gets to pucks, getting pucks through at goaltenders, creating rebounds batch. So, you know, there's the on-ice element, and there's also the off-ice element. This room is not what it was last year. We talked about that, and we've talked about that at length here on this podcast. So this is a way to maybe right the internal situation that was going on with this team. But this is a regime that if they like a player, and if they've had success with a player in the past, they will go back to that player. We've seen it numerous times here in Vancouver. It's only been a few seasons, but, you know, Marcus Pettersson, Ian Cole, Danton Heinen was obviously a player that they had understood and dealt with a little bit in the past as well. This is a number of players that, you know, Daniel Sprong didn't work out in Vancouver, but if they like a player, if they want to see a fit, they'll do it. So some pretty interesting words from Jim Rutherford there. Pretty, I think, to the point, pretty adamant that this is the right move. We'll see how it plays out on the ice, though.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think the short-term question has to be, does this help them qualify for the playoffs? And again, we talked about this in the first segment. They're better defensively. Their depth forward options are better. They're missing punch at the top of the lineup by moving on from JT Miller. And ultimately, we're going to have to wait and see how this all plays out going forward. Okay, we've got some time for the mailbag still. We've got some questions from Twitter and from Blue Sky. Let's start with JD, who sent this question in after the Miller trade, but before the Marcus Pettersson trade, but I think it still applies. He says, with JT now gone, how much pressure is not only on Elias Pettersson, but management? He also talked about who takes on more of an enforcer role with the team. They've got guys like Dakota Joshua can play with a bit of grease. Kiefer Sherwood, when he comes back in the lineup, we know he's a hit machine. So
Nils Höglander, who's showing that?
Yeah, especially in the game against Dallas, he was more aggressive on the forecheck, and Connor Garland brings that kind of bite to his game as well. So there are guys that have that quotient to them, and Derek Forbert is a guy, Carson Soucy. So, you know, there are players that can play that way, and maybe we'll need to play more that way with a guy like JT Miller no longer in the picture. Let's start with the conversation around the pressure around Elias Pettersson. And we both agreed after the Miller trade that there was increased pressure on Elias Pettersson with Miller gone. In the wake of the Marcus Pettersson trade, there is even more pressure on Elias Pettersson because, again, unless there are subsequent moves coming, and we don't have all that information, so we have to work with what we've got right now, Elias Pettersson is the bona fide number one center on this team without a doubt, and they will need him to perform like it.
He is their game breaker in the top six. He's the guy that's expected to drive play, win his matchups. And prior to the Marcus Pettersson deal, it was maybe a thought that, okay, that first round pick that they have of the New York Rangers, it could be used for another center. That did not happen. They used it instead on a depth forward and a left shot D. So what does that mean? Elias Pettersson, it's going to be even more on you in that top line. If they keep it that way with DeBrusk and Besser, you're going to have to win your matchups. You're going to have to put up points. You're going to have to be assertive. And listen, JT Miller was able to, whatever his flaws were, he was a player that was not afraid of taking risks, grabbing a game by the scruff of the neck, and at times willing his team to victory. We've seen it over, you know, the past 6 years as he developed into a star player. There are moments you're saying the team needed that and JT Miller provided it. We've seen that with Elias Pettersson to a certain degree, but not in the last year. Now he's in a situation, Batch, he's got to bring it because he is the guy in the forward group. Quinn Hughes is going to do his thing. Elias Pettersson has to do his.
And the part of JD's question about pressure on management, I think, is the same answer. The pressure is ratcheted up on Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford in the wake of what many perceive to be an overpayment in the acquisition of defenseman Marcus Pedersen. So that means, you know, there are going to be people looking to see how this team performs. Management will get more of the blame if they don't do well. There will be more pressure on them to make subsequent deals to ensure that this team doesn't lose a step. There will be a lot of criticism if this team goes on to miss the playoffs. So this is a high-stakes game for Elias Pettersson, but it's a high-stakes game for Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin as well.
And, Batch, I'm sure this is happening to you as well. I'm getting text as we speak right now from out-of-town people saying, hey, what's up with the Vancouver Canucks? Why did they make these moves? And that's going to be a question for this management group if this team does not win games, or if they don't qualify, or even, you know, if Marcus Pedersen does not sign in Vancouver. I'm sure that an extension is a part of the conversation here. But the whole idea is there's a lot of questions being asked about this management group, and it's ratcheted up to your point where you make a couple of big moves, especially that second one, you know, that leverage you might have had in trade talks for an impact piece later on. People are going to question whether you've made the right move. So we'll see what happens on the ice. But I think no doubt management is under pressure to show that what they did was the right move. And, you know, this is a team that may not play the most attractive style if you start looking at their forward group, just because they have taken a hit there, right? JT Miller is off the roster. You did add defense, but you got to get results. If you're gonna play a certain style, especially a conservative style, it's imperative that you pick up W's. I think people in this city will be okay with winning maybe boring games or low event games, but the key part of that is you got to win.
Absolutely. Just win. That's what this all comes down to. Any criticism that you might receive will go by the wayside if this team has success and wins hockey games down the stretch. Our next question from Winston is a good one and a different one. He says, as part of the media covering the Canucks for a few years now, what's your experience and emotion of seeing two trades in one day, notwithstanding one trade was before a game played and another after the game, like tonight? So I'm going to be perfectly honest. It's been kind of a frantic evening for us. Sure. Basically, from the moment that we got word that JT Miller was going to be moved, because suddenly all of your game prep kind of goes out the window. We spent half of the first period talking about the trade while trying to call the game at the same time. All of our pregame show hit was analyzing that trade. As we've already talked about, we recorded a podcast episode after the game that now we're having to re-record. So, you know, you feel a little bit frazzled, I think, and you're kind of being pulled in different directions, because as you're alluding to, you're hearing from people asking questions. You're trying to, you know, analyze it in real time and give your perspective and think outside the box about what these trades might mean. And also, we still have to do our job and call the game. And on top of that, you know, as I said in the podcast that we recorded that will never go to air, I had a good relationship with JT Miller, a working relationship in sure. The media. He was always respectful to me. I know a lot of guys in the media can say the same thing. He gave his time. He would take time to do interviews with us. So I'm going to miss seeing him around the room. But in terms of the emotion, it's more just about, wow, they've really done this. And kind of feeling almost, it feels surreal that this team that we were calling in game 7 of the second round just a few short months ago has made a major change to their core group, and that there could be more major changes coming.
Yeah, and a player that played well in those playoffs as well. He had the toughest matchups against McDavid and Draisaitl and took that team to 7 games. And I echo what you said about JT in terms of just his dealings with the media and all that. You know, there's a number of moments. Him and his family have done a great job in the community as well, their charitable work locally. So, you know, it sucks to see somebody go that you've known over the last 6 years, even in passing. But in the lead up to this game, we're talking about an impact piece, right? This is not, and I remember in 2022 when Jason Dickinson got traded for Riley Stillman, like that was a similar timing of the deal. I remember being at Rogers Arena next to you and that deal went down and we were talking about it, but that's different. That's a depth player that did not hit in Vancouver, so they were making a move. This is a 100-point player. This is a guy that has the second highest points per game in franchise history. When that happens before a game, that is major news. That is something that you can't really, you know, it does kind of rattle you from I can't believe they did this, right? So no doubt about that, where you're looking at the game, the way the talking points, and even when we were doing the roundtable hit with Sat and Dan, like we were helping to bring in the details of that trade. It was like a four-person basically bringing information.
I saw this tweet. This guy's in the deal
Emily now. Kaplan said this. Elliot said this. Frank said this. And that's really unique, Batch. That, like, I don't think I've ever done that to this scale anyways, when you're talking about getting ready for a game where, you know, an impact. We're talking an all-star. We're talking about one of the best players in the world being traded right before a game. I don't know how many times that happens in your career, but it happened tonight.
It certainly did. Next question from Ryan says, my goodness, do not envy all the Pettersons. How are you going to do this? Petey, D. Petey, Marcus? And the answer is, we will first name all of them when calling the game. So, you know, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, we called those guys. It was Daniel to Henrik, or Daniel Sedin to Henrik Sedin. In this case, we've got Elias Pettersson, we've got Elias Pettersson, and we've got Marcus Pettersson. And this isn't unprecedented for me when I was calling games with Surrey in the BCHL. The Fitzgerald triplets played for the Victoria Grizzlies and played on the same line. So it makes your job a little bit more difficult. And I was kind of joking around on Twitter tonight saying, pray for me with all these Pettersons that they're bringing in. But, you know, a few extra words, a few extra first names we have to throw in there. But ultimately, it doesn't change a whole lot.
No, it doesn't. And I feel for you because you're the one who actually has to say it first. I can take a couple of seconds and have a bit of a breather here. For you, it's... you got to be immediate with the Pettersson. So
Marcus Pettersson to Elias Pettersson to Elias Pettersson back to Marcus Pettersson. He scores or whatever.
However, with Marcus being added to the team, it does move Elias Pettersson down maybe the depth chart just a little bit, even if it's one spot. So does that mean he's not in the NHL? Potentially, does he move back to Abbotsford? Is he a consistent? I don't think there's any value having him in the NHL if he's not going to play. So there still might be two Pettersons on the roster here. We might have to delay the three Pettersson situation potentially until next year.
Yeah, I'll look in the NHL rulebook. I'm pretty sure there's a rule that says you can't have three guys with the same name on your roster at the same time. So they'll have to move Elias Pettersson down to Abbotsford at least for the moment. Time for a couple more questions here as we get close to wrapping up, hopefully our last recording of the night. Woodrow, the eligible bachelor, writes in, how will JT Miller's legacy be remembered in Canucks history? And I think much like Roberto Luongo, much like Ryan Kessler, much like even Pavel Bure, Miller's time in Vancouver will be remembered as complicated. On the ice, was a guy that ran hot. At his peak, was a tremendous player, scored 100 points, which not many guys in the history of this franchise have been able to do. He was the seventh all-time Canuck to accomplish that feat. At the same time, when things went bad, he was clearly frustrated. He was clearly a negative influence. We saw the drama play out with him and Elias Pettersson this year. We saw lots of slamming in sticks a couple of years ago when the team was struggling in the North Division season under Travis Green. We saw his lack of back-checking highlighted on Hockey Night in Canada. So a complicated legacy for JT Miller. One of the best players in franchise history, absolutely. One of the most frustrating players in franchise history, absolutely.
Ultimately, he's a player that cared a lot here in this market.
Sometimes too much.
Exactly. And, you know, when things are going well or when you need a boost, he was an individual that leaned in and willed his team to victory. When things are going bad, he cared and he voiced it. And to your point, sometimes the body language, sometimes more than that. And that's essentially, you know, this is not a guy that played at 50% in terms of caring about his team and wanting to win. So I think his legacy will be, you're right, it's going to be complicated. A guy that wore his heart on his sleeve for better or for worse. And more than anything, he's going to go down as still one of the most skilled players that this franchise has ever seen. You look at the stats, points per game, ever since he got to Vancouver, he was an impact piece. It was a bet that Vancouver made and Jim Benning made the trade. A lot of questions asked at that time over a first round pick. It was the right bet to make. He was the right player, and he nearly got this team to a spot where it looked like they had a 1-2 punch down the middle. Unfortunately, that went sideways real bad, and, you know, I'm going to be honest. I think at the highest points, he was a great player in the city, and he was an amplifier for some of those good vibes. But at the worst, what we saw was a real lack of maturity from not only him, but Elias Pettersson at the end as well, and just the way that situation played out, they couldn't figure it out on their own. So therefore, something had to be done. So it is complicated. It's you know, there's some good moments, but there was also some moments where you're saying, I wish you had sorted it out a lot cleaner than it did in the end.
Absolutely. Time for one last question from Gonzalo, who writes in and says, need your guys' Royal Rumble picks. Yes, the Royal Rumble happening on Saturday night. I've got John Cena for this one.
Okay.
It's his last Royal
All
Rumble
right.
ever. I think he's going to do it. He's going to be in the main event of WrestleMania one more time. So we may not be able to see him, but I think he's going to be the last man standing at the end of the Royal Rumble.
All right, I'm going to go. I'm biased here because I caught up with him a couple months ago, but I'm going with the guy. I think Sami Zayn.
Ooh.
He even told me, he's like, he feels like he's the Jumbo Joe Thornton of the wrestling world. Never won the big prize, but he's always around there. He's a Hall of Famer in the future. I feel like this is his shot to take the spotlight. We've heard the storylines of, you know, Seth Rollins and all those guys saying, it's your time now. Start being selfish. To think about yourself. Kevin Owens as well. I'm going with Sammy.
So there you go, Gonzalo. Just about out of time on the show this week. Before we go, Randy, we'll be back on the air on Sunday for the Canucks and Red Wings 5 o'clock faceoff from Rogers Arena. But you've got Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi on Saturday night as well. What do you guys have coming up on your show?
In mere hours, we got Toronto, Edmonton, and Calgary also going to play the Detroit Red Wings, who will have the following night, as you mentioned, Vancouver, Detroit as well. So an action-packed, a lot to talk about, bunch of trades this week.
Absolutely, and there may be more coming. We'll wait and see, so make sure to keep it locked to Sportsnet 650 for the latest Canucks breaking news. You have been listening to In the Booth right here on your official home of the Canucks. This is Sportsnet 650.